Welcome to Voices for Biodiversity. I'm Joshua Dudley. Today, we're talking with writer Devin Reese about the importance of sea turtles to biodiversity.
Devin, thanks for coming on and agreeing to be interviewed today.
Thank you for bringing me on.
You wrote a really fascinating article about sea turtles. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so sea turtles are pretty special to me because I've been working with turtles for decades. And that article specifically called out one of my earliest experiences with sea turtles. I was right out of college and I took an internship in South Florida with the Conservancy. And my boss's name was Dave Addison, and he's featured in the article. He has continued to work with marine turtles all these decades. And it was a very pivotal time for me, not just because I was right out of college and thinking about what to do with my life, but also because it was one of the first times that I was sort of fully immersed in the field, in nature. So I worked on a natural areas inventory of the county, which meant every day stomping through swamps, often with water up to my chest, holding a clipboard over my head to inventory the flora and fauna and find things like rare orchids or alligators. But I also went out with the Sea Turtle Project on weekends, having always had a thing about turtles. And so that was the first time that I saw a marine turtle laying eggs. And it was also the first time that I had the good fortune to get to release hatchlings from a nest into the sea and ended up in the local papers for Naples, Florida, with a picture of me releasing all these hatchlings. So it really left an impression, and my supervisor, Dave, and I remained fast friends. And it was really him also that inspired me to go back and get a PhD in biology. So this story is honestly a sort of a tribute to the work that Dave Addison has done on marine turtles, specifically on loggerheads over the years. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting on some docks with him in Canada about 2 years ago. And he told me the story about Emily and how amazing it was that Emily had come back over and over to her natal nesting beach, and how she was exceptional in the number of eggs she produced. She was what you'd call a very fecund loggerhead turtle. Mm-hmm. She was very loyal to her natal beach. And Dave and his team of interns, every year there were more interns on the project who he had an impact on, they managed to put satellite transmitters on her 3 times, which made her an unusual turtle in terms of the length of monitoring that she got, which of course helps us understand movements once turtles go back out to sea from these mm-hmm. natal beaches. So this story is about Emily, and it's also about Dave and this ongoing marine turtle monitoring program in Florida.
Oh, that's wonderful. What can you tell us about loggerhead turtles, and specifically why are turtles so important for biodiversity?
There are 7 species of marine turtles, and they're each important in their own right. Mm-hmm. But since you asked me, I'll focus on the loggerheads because Emily was a loggerhead, mm-hmm. is a loggerhead. She's hopefully still out there. She's expected to actually return to the beach in 2022. They come up every 2 to 3 years, so she's due to come up again. So loggerheads, from an ecosystem perspective, I mean, you could start with the old Paul Ehrlich model, which is that you have the airplane with the rivets in the wings, and each rivet is a species. And you ask the fundamental question of sort of how many rivets are you willing to remove and still fly on that plane? But we can do more now because there have been so many years of collecting data on loggerheads. So aside from just saying every species has some role in the ecosystem, with loggerheads specifically, that they're called loggerheads because they have these big heads and these big jaws, and they munch on really hard foods. They basically cruise around on the seafloor eating crustaceans and even eating mollusks, like they eat conchs. And so in the process, they're chopping up all these materials and sort of distributing nutrients, minerals back to the seafloor. And all marine turtles travel long distances. So in that sense, they're great at dispersing nutrients because not only are they chopping up the food, but of course they're pooping as they go and putting nutrients back into the system. And then because all aquatic turtles nest on land, when they go up onto a nesting beach every few years, the female is also bringing nutrients onto that beach. She is loaded up with nutrients when she comes up because she's had to, for example, get a lot of calcium to shell up all those eggs. It's a very metabolically intensive process. Mm-hmm. And when she lays the eggs, a number of them are not going to hatch. And so they're going to stay on the beach and put nutrients into the sand, all those materials from both the shell and in those cases, the embryonic fluids. Mm-hmm. And even when they do hatch, of course, she's still leaving some materials behind. And she's aerating the sand, and these materials are getting mixed into the sand. So there are a number of ways ecologically. There are other things too. If you look, for example, at marine predator-prey relationships, mm-hmm. those little hatchlings, have you ever had contact with a hatchling turtle?
I have not.
You have not. Well, you must. Those little hatchlings, when they come out for any species of turtle, they're soft. Their shell is soft. And it takes a while to harden up. And so I call them tacos because, in fact, for a raccoon or a fox, a dog, a feral pig, they're just these little delicious, soft morsels. And, you know, the hatchling has to go from a nest a number of meters to the ocean. And if you watch as these hatchlings go from the nest to the sea, you will see birds just swooping in to smack them up. And there's a statistic that has been cited many times in the marine turtle community that if you look at hatchlings that are born, only 1 in 1,000 of the ones that hatch will survive to adulthood. Mm-hmm. 1 in 1,000, like it's a tiny number. So between what happens to them in the nest, because feral pigs, for example, actually dig up the nest, mm-hmm. what happens to them as they walk from the nest to the sea, what happens to them as they swim out to the sargassum mats, that's where most marine turtles spend their early years, mm-hmm. are on these big seaweed mats. So they're actually quite important in that sense in the food webs for the marine system.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. I was doing some research. Did you write about feral hogs in that article?
Yeah, a little bit, because Dave Addison has worked very hard to eradicate hogs from the Key Waden Island, which is mm-hmm. the island featured in the story.
Yeah,
it's not an easy proposition. He literally gets permits and goes out there with a shotgun. And he's getting older, as I mentioned, at the end of the article, sort of semi-retired. So he is basically now counting on the local government to try to control these hogs, but they're even swimming over now from adjacent islands.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very difficult problem. And they do in that project and most projects, they cover, you know, the nest with a wire mesh mm-hmm. to protect them. So, you know, they get people out there to monitor and see where the nests are put and then cover them up. But hogs are pretty good at even getting through the wire mesh because they're just such big, you know, powerful animals.
Yeah. Is Dave a volunteer, by the way?
No, Dave is staff for the Conservancy of Southwest Florida.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, that's been his entire career job mm-hmm. is to be staff there and to host literally at this point hundreds of interns. Mm-hmm. I dare say he's probably made an impression on all, if not many of them, the same way he did on me, just because of his commitment to conservation mm-hmm. and to gathering data on the flora and fauna of Southwest Florida.
Wow, that's beautiful. I'd love to see them sometime. I had a very small sea turtle as a pet when I was younger. We were crabbing and he was caught in the crab pots.
Another source of mortality, is a lot of, I didn't realize that they got caught in crab pots. I know they get caught in certain types of fishing operations, mm-hmm. right? And it's bycatch. So yeah, that's a challenge too, isn't
it? Yeah. I had a little one. He squirted water out of his nose and yeah, he was fun. We had him for probably 6 months in a little water tank.
You had to keep the seawater in there. So you did. You have had contact with a hatchling turtle then.
Yes, but not. Well, he wasn't soft. He was.
He wasn't. He'd already hardened up. Yeah. So I know that also it's hard to believe, but when those hatchlings come out and they're scrambling to the water, they get eaten by the crabs on the beach as well. Mm-hmm. It's hard to picture a crab eating a marine turtle, but They
do. Well, they pinch at their neck, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you end up writing this article? What brought your interest to the forefront to write about Emily and Dave and your time?
I think it was that conversation sitting on a dock in Canada. Dave mm-hmm. and his wife have a house in Canada. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll go up. It's very remote. And just sitting on the dock, chatting about science, chatting about the different projects that we're each working on. And that Emily story caught my attention. It was a quote I put in the article that I thought was really beautiful, which is when he said, you know, no matter how long I've done this work for, no matter how mundane it may seem, because anyone who's done field work knows that you'll sit somewhere for hours and hours and nothing will really change sometimes. You know, mm-hmm. I spent hours in meadows studying lizards. It was kind of dreary in a way. But then something will happen that's so special that you don't forget it. So it really struck me when he told me about Emily, just the impression it had on him when she came back again in 2019. Mm-hmm. He got to see this same female over this period of like 30 years. Pretty remarkable that these females are able to find these natal beaches again. You know, mm-hmm. they use geomagnetism and perhaps chemical cues from the sea. And there is something about being traditional natural history, right? To follow an individual. But there's things you learn by following an individual that you wouldn't figure out if you weren't able to do that. I used to follow a species of freshwater turtle around with radio transmitters, the Western pond turtle. Mm-hmm. And the first time I put transmitters on them, people still thought that these were fully aquatic turtles, that they spent all their time in rivers and ponds in the west coast of the U.S. And the first transmitter I put on, the next day I went looking for her with my antenna, and she had left the water course and she had walked 3 miles overnight and jumped into another pond. Mm. So sometimes following an individual tells you something outrageous that you just wouldn't have realized, you know?
Well, that's wonderful. Tell us more about your science work now.
Well, I'm a science writer now. So yeah. I write about all kinds of things, you know, not just about Dave Addison's work, but mm-hmm. About the work of a number of scientists. And I end up writing about quite a range, usually in biology, mm-hmm. Including in genomics now, because a lot of people are working on genomics. And I'm also the executive editor of Natural History Magazine. Mm-hmm. So for that, I'm bringing other writers on to write stories. So I'm really immersed in science writing and science education.
Do you find that kids are interested in this stuff? Like when I was growing up, there was this great magazine called Ranger Rick that got me interested in these kind of things. You remember that?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm actually also now writing for Cricket Magazine, which publishes Muse for like mm-hmm. age 9 to 14.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we all know that the magazines are kind of going out, right? And if they can't adapt to digital, they're having a hard time. So I also really love writing for this group called Complexly, which publishes SciShow mm-hmm. and PBS Eon Show, because that's digital and it gets a lot of use, whole lot of use. So it's exciting sometimes to write something and then see the next day that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have watched it. But I'm old enough that I appreciate the traditional magazine too, and the way that paper feels in your hands and the excitement when it comes in the mail. So I really like to write across platforms and also across ages.
Okay, great. Well, let's get back to talking about Emily. What's the outlook right now for Emily and other loggerhead sea turtles? Like, are they growing? Is it expanding? Yeah. I think they're a threatened species right now. Is that correct?
They are listed. Individual populations are listed as endangered. Okay. And the overall species is threatened, as are all the marine turtles. I think the current estimate of loggerhead female nesting populations is either 40 or 50,000, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. One of the major problems in the prognosis is actually climate change, mm-hmm. because you may know that the sex of turtles is dependent on the temperature while nesting. So if it gets warmer, you get females. So we're starting to get these skewed sex ratios. And, you know, this is kind of a difficult thing to control, sort of digging up all the nests and moving them into incubation conditions. So this is something that marine turtle biologists are grappling with is, as climate warms, how are we going to keep males in these populations?
I understand that. Can our listeners do anything? Is there any volunteer organizations or any other ways they can help?
Oh, I think they're, especially people who live in a community where turtles nest, for example, in off the coast of North Carolina, there are lots of volunteer opportunities because they literally get volunteers out pretty much all night during nesting season. So whenever I go down to that area, I see the teams of volunteers who sign up for shifts and sit on the beach all night to make sure that they pinpoint those nest locations. So anyone who lives in a coastal area with marine turtle nesting can certainly, you know, Google volunteer nesting beaches and get trained up to do that. And it's a lot of fun. It seems like a community that has a good time together. And then that community also gets to see those hatchlings coming out. If you're not in a coastal area, there are many nonprofit organizations now that need support to try to protect marine turtles. And those organizations, your money will go to legislation, for example, and ensuring that they, you know, remain on the list if they need to be on the endangered species list, doing assessments to see if other populations of loggerheads or the other species need to be listed. So yeah, I think there are plenty of opportunities. I mean, I know we all have a lot of conservation priorities because there's so many species that are suffering in the wake of all our human footprints. So again, marine turtles for me, turtles in general happen to be special to me. And I got my doctorate studying turtles. And for someone else, it may be a mammal or an insect. I mean, there are no shortage of species in need of support. But yes, turtles, I really hope to see turtles stay on Earth. They are one of the older species on Earth. They've made it this far with the incredible changes that have happened. They made it through the end Cretaceous extinction 65 million years ago when so many things didn't. So I don't know. I think it would be sad if there's a point where we don't have turtles on Earth. It would really speak to our inability to kind of manage the global changes that we're responsible for at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And with no turtles, what would that do to the ecosystem? No sea turtles.
Well, some of the things we talked about in terms of moving nutrients around, it's hard to say if you take this one individual species out, you know, of the millions, it's going to do exactly that. So I don't really want to be that specific, but for example, some of the turtles are grazers, and so they graze in, you know, in the seagrass beds, and they clip the seagrasses, and then pieces of it float away and nourish the whole coastal tidal ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So if you get rid of that action, you could have problems with those nurseries for so many other marine species.
Well, I hope we can all do our part to be a voice for biodiversity.
Yes.